is June 27, 1985, second side of our fourth interview with Saul Weisberg. Sorry, Saul, we cut you off in the middle because we were too interested to be watching the time as well,
I know where we're at. As I was saying, you ready?
Ready.
As I was saying, the government's new program, Housing for the Elderly, called for a new Section 202, which provided 100%, or thereabouts anyway, 100% financing of construction and developmental costs. And in addition, most important, provided under what's called Section 8, an arrangement by which a tenant would pay for rent only 25% of his income, which meant that if a tenant's total income was $100 a month from Social Security, his rent would be only $25. And there were some other arrangements and so forth, which meant that some tenants really could pay nothing. A wonderful, extraordinary program, and a very expensive one to the government, and the government is finally discontinuing it, unfortunately. Anyway, with that program floating around, we were desperate to develop more housing. Now, on Forward Avenue, right across the street from Taylor Alderdice, the American Jewish Congress was attempting to develop housing for the elderly under this particular program. This was back in the 70s. And they ran into, as you normally do in these fairs, a very serious zoning program, which in turn resulted in very fierce and indeed vicious struggle with the neighbors. At one point, though, it looked as if the Congress was going to win, or did win, the zoning program. Thought it might be getting the money, and then President Nixon froze all money for housing and the financial resources that the American Jewish Congress needed went out the window. The Federation knew about this, and indeed it had some contact with the American Jewish Congress in connection with housing, oddly enough, years earlier when the Federation had made a loan, I think it was a loan rather than a grant, to the American Jewish Congress when the latter was developing some low-cost housing in Leamington. Housing which, by the way, proved in the long run to be economically impractical and I think finally went bankrupt. Federation, I'll go back. I don't want to call it Federation in this instance. Jerry Lieber was already, I think at this time, president of Council for the Elderly, chairman of Council for the Elderly, a newly formed committee within the Federation to attempt to coordinate activities for the elderly, whatever that may mean. He, of course, was very much interested in housing for the elderly. We had some discussions about the possibility of going to the Congress and asking Congress if they would allow Federation to take over the task or the opportunity of developing this property on Forward Housing, on which the Congress had an option. Jerry then went to Dave Horvitz and Dan Berger, and it doesn't make a difference, third person, who were the leaders of the Congress in this effort, and asked them directly if they would be interested in this. And they said yes, they thought they would, and although it had a very small board, the board came together, of Congress that is, and it agreed that it would let Federation do this with certain conditions which aren't important at this moment. Jerry, as a result, has always looked upon himself, I think, as being the father of Forward Housing. Anyway, Federation took it over. We came to terms with the neighbors, worked it out with the government, and lo and behold, we developed Forward Housing. When we developed the Riverview One, we had done all the paperwork and everything else ourselves. By that I mean, to a large extent, Harry Kamen and I think when we did have a lawyer, of course. Second time around, however, we hired the National Development Corporation at Seymour Baskin and Marvin Kamen as the developers to handle all the red tape, paperwork, relationships with the government and so forth for a fee. And it worked out very well. So we did the same thing with Forward Housing. And Forward Housing was, of course, tremendous interest and tremendous desirability in our Jewish and total community, by the way. One of the issues that have been raised, and I haven't mentioned this up to this point, of course, in developing government housing is the question of, is it just for Jews or is it for the total community? The Riverview, because of the nature of the arrangements for the government, at least in Riverview 2, there appeared to be sort of an exemption from the requirement for open housing, that is, for willingness to accept non-Jews as well as Jews. Riverview 1, there is a requirement because it's a direct loan, but it was never pushed very hard by the government because it seemed to be recognized that not too many non-Jews were likely to apply. I don't know if there was a non-Jew who came into Riverview, and I'm going to go back and tell you that story in a second because it's an interesting one. Anyway, at Forward Housing, however, was a different cup of tea, and we had to make commitments to the government that we would advertise and promote and so forth. And it was a very touchy business. In fact, some people had some real concern about it. And it did turn out that there were some non-Jews in Forward Housing, but not many. I think less than 10%. Not as many, as a matter of fact, as we had, I think, committed ourselves to when we developed Forward Housing. We had an overwhelming number of applications. When the announcement was made that Forward Housing would take applications, I think on the very first day, I think we had 1,000 letters or more. In addition, we had a long list of people who had applied to American Jewish Congress. And we consolidated all this into a single list of, I don't know how many. And in order to limit the number of applicants, we did, of course, establish criteria. And one of the first steps we took, if I remember rightly, was to review all the applications and to eliminate a tremendous number of them simply on the ground that their income exceeded a certain modest level that we felt we should impose as the top income. Some people felt that wasn't altogether fair, but we agreed that there just had to be certain rules, not certain rules, certain methods of managing what was really indeed an unmanageable number of applications. Anyway, we then established, let me go back one step to say, Forward Housing was developed very successfully, opened, I don't remember anymore when, 1980, whenever it was, and the biggest issue by far was how to select the tenants, that 114 apartments. We did put together a small committee in which Dr. Mermelstein, Leonard Rudolph, Harry Wagner were members. I should point out at this point, but I omitted it earlier, that one of the issues that had been raised when Riverview 1 was built was the whole question of who should be in charge of admissions. The home, as you know, had a long history of some unfortunate contacts, indeed, in connection with their admission policies and so forth. We pushed, Federation people pushed very hard for having Jewish Family and Children's Service deal with applicants and carry out interviews with applicants and so forth. And much to our pleasure, the home people agreed. And so Riverview 1, Riverview 2, and Forward Housing followed a process in which applicants were interviewed by Jewish Family and Children's Service. There was no lay contact between applicants and applicant. But the JFCS evaluation of the applicant would be turned over to a lay committee for a final decision. And as I said, in the case of Forward Housing, the committee consisted of at least Dr. Mermelstein, Leonard Rudolph, and Harry Wagner. And the application proved to be from a group of very old people, very sick people, and it was a very trying experience to review these applications and to attempt to arrive at a conclusion which would say no. And again and again, in a sense, the hearts rolled the head, because one of the big concerns of the committee and of the board was that the final tenant body at Forward Housing should include enough active and vigorous individuals to make sure that activities could take place, and that it wouldn't just simply be another institution like the Home for the Aged. And yet the kind of applications we had could have led to that. However, it did work out, I think, well, and as I understand it, the tenant body did turn out to be a relatively balanced group. At the time that Forward Housing came into operation, Leon Kalson resigned from the home, and the question came up then about the management of the three now facilities, Riverview 1, Riverview 2, and Forward Housing. And this time it was agreed that there ought to be a new full-time individual who would manage all three facilities and who would report to the two boards jointly, and that there would be indeed a joint management committee. It was my hope, because I think it was my idea to do this, it was my hope that in a way this would begin to consolidate the three facilities into a single integrated undertaking, even though the Riverview was on the board, on the grounds of the Home for the Aged. We employed someone by the name of Edward Schwartz. We didn't have too many applications, unfortunately, for the position. And very briefly, Schwartz's tenure was not really a successful one. He remained executive for, I think, 3 years. In the meantime, the Home for the Aged went through all the experiences that it's been going through in the past several years. Schwartz finally was forced out, and when he was forced out, it finally was worked out that Riverview became basically part of the Home for the Aged, and Forward Housing, in its turn, became the responsibility of the Jewish Family and Children's Service, and that is the current arrangement, and as far as I know, it's working out well. In the meantime, I should point out that when Schwartz came on, efforts were finally made to have the Jewish Community Center begin to offer services both to Riverview and to Forward Housing, and the philosophy that services should be made available and so forth were accepted. And on the whole, without going into any more detail, I think the housing programming in Pittsburgh has been successful. I just wish that there were more, and I don't know whether the Federation is I'm sure it's making substantial and vigorous efforts to develop further housing, but it is very, very difficult to do today. Government financing is limited, and is, as a practical matter, almost impossible to do it with private financing, more or less. Just as an aside, almost, because it'll be of interest to you in case you're not familiar with it, although both of you may be. While I was still with Federation, we did make one very strong effort to develop a further program of housing for the elderly, which has developed into housing for the elderly, but on a different income level. And I'll give you the background of that, because it is interesting, I think. There is a site, there was a series of homes on Beacon Street, right above Murray Avenue. They were right between really Hillel Academy and what used to be Weinstein's Restaurant, whatever is there now, the parking lot. Quite a few years ago, a national development company had attempted to make a development there. They got into a zoning fight and had lost the fight. When we began to search Squirrel Hill for a site for housing for the elderly, this appeared to be a marvelous location. It's right up against Beacon and Murray, and you know what could be closer to synagogues, to movies, to food stores, and so forth. And we agreed with National Development Corporation that we would take an option on the Federation would take an option on the property, and that we would then spearhead an effort to get whatever zoning variances or zoning changes were required to enable housing for the elderly to be built. All this with the understanding that we were to get government financing. It was understood that if we didn't get government financing, that the owners of the property would eventually be released to do with whatever they wished with the property. And the Federation did then attempt to change the zoning. We ran into a very bitter, some bitter resistance, some fierce resistance from some of the neighbors, including, interestingly enough, a small Orthodox group that lives on Bartlett Street, directly in behind the Hillel Academy. It's interesting. I've always been very pleased, if I may say so, I've always been very pleased with what I thought were, I'll use the word skill, that we used in handling the zoning arrangements. We had a full-scale public meeting with all the neighbors at the Carnegie Library in Squirrel Hill, where I presented, well, I don't know if I presented, I think Sam came and presented it, but I basically answered all the questions and so forth. We got the Squirrel Hill Urban Coalition to support us, and eventually we compromised with the Squirrel Hill Urban Coalition and with some of the neighbors on the height of the building and on some other features and so forth. And we got the zoning change approved by the Pittsburgh Planning Commission and unanimously eventually by City Council, and all we needed then was government money. Jerry Lieber had warned me that, if that's the right word, that the Federation was going to turn out to be the straw man in this, and that all we were going to do was to make it possible for National Development Company and the owners to put together housing there rather than Federation. But we took the risk, but it turned out to be a risk that, it turned out to be unsuccessful. We could not get government financing, and eventually we were forced to let National Development Corporation take the property back and the owners back, and they in turn then built Beacon Place, which is a condominium arrangement, but for individuals who are, I guess, 62 and over, because this was what the zoning condition required. The building had been rezoned specifically for apartment dwelling for the elderly. It's an interesting business because we had over the years a lot of discussion about whether Federation had any responsibility to try to develop housing for individuals other than those who are low income. I had some question about that, but there were some people, I could name them, who felt very keenly that Federation should be promoting housing for the well-to-do and the middle income and so forth, on the grounds that this was a special kind of service that well-to-do could not obtain on their own. And on top of that, this is a major philosophical discussion, and one I think it's probably been resolved today. But on top of that, Federation has reached a point where it should see itself as serving the total Jewish community without reference, so to speak, to even such a factor as income. Anyway, as you know, Beacon Place did come into existence, and I think is really a very large asset, particularly to the Jewish community, although I assume not only Jews live there. I know lots of families who have elderly people, parents and so forth there, who are delighted with the fact that Beacon Place is in existence, and Beacon Place would not be in existence, there's no question about it, if it had not been for Federation.
That was an inadvertent plus for the community.
It wasn't so inadvertent in a sense that it was always understood it could happen. I see what you're saying. It's inadvertent in one sense. I'll accept that. It turned out to be a plus, all right, I guess. And it was also a plus, though, for the owners of the National Development. They did pretty well, I think, probably money-wise. Anyway, that's housing.
Yeah, you've played a significant role in all of that, Saul, and our community is the richer because of it. It's just fascinating to me, all the areas of influence that you've had.
Thank you. Here, what I'd like to talk about next, although I don't know if we have enough time today, but maybe we'll...
Well, we can certainly start.
All right. I'd sort of like to talk about community relations.
Okay.
You may or may not know this or remember this, but when the old Jewish Community Relations Committee, or Council, which I'll describe in a couple of minutes, was merged into Federation, I staffed the committee that arrived at the conclusion to recommend that merger. So I have had an involvement in community relations that is apparently not so evident on the surface. Prelude to that is that there was, as you know very well, a long history of a separate Jewish Community Relations Council. By separate, I mean separate from Federation or the United Jewish Fund, but subsidized by the fund.
Is that sort of a national pattern to do it that way? Or?
It's been a very... There was no pattern, let's put it that way. In some communities, there was a single agency in which the Federation included a community relations committee. In other communities, such as Philadelphia, there was a separate community relations committee, and a very strong one. Where there was separatism, there was a lot of variation in how strong the separate committee might be. In Philadelphia, for example, was very strong. St. Louis, I forget already, but I think it was very weak and so forth. Baltimore, I know, had a separate one, which was sort of odd. It was rather small, yet independent. Pittsburgh, we had a relatively strong one in one respect. By the way, its history was very long, went all the way back to World War II. Lillian Friedman was not the first director. The first director was a man whose name escapes me at the moment, although I could dredge up if I wanted to. But Lillian ran it from 1944 to well into the 60s, of course.
Lillian
Friedberg, I'm sorry. What did I say?
I just was repeating.
I didn't use the name, I'm sorry. I'm rambling, I shouldn't be doing that.
No, you're not rambling,
yes.
Saul, for him.
So I'll start by saying that the whole business of having a central community relations agency in local communities goes back to World War II, obviously, or even earlier, perhaps. Interestingly enough, the National Jewish Community Relations Council was organized, among others, by Edgar Kaufman from Pittsburgh. Played a very significant role in that many, many years ago, back in World War II. Pittsburgh, at that time, they organized a local Jewish Community Relations Council, as I said, subsidized by the United Jewish Fund, and including representatives from various defense agencies, as they are called, such as the American Jewish Committee, American Jewish Congress, Jewish Labor Committee, and so forth. I won't go into detail on that. And as you know, Lillian Freeberg was employed at a very low sum. She may have even done it, I think, as a volunteer originally, as the executive director. And for many years, it was a very effective and important force in not only promoting good relations between the Jewish community and certain elements of the non-Jewish community, but a very important element in promoting civil rights for minorities, particularly blacks. And Lillian Friedberg and Florence Reisenstein, who was very important in the agency and in the program, and others were recognized as being leaders in bringing about the legislative changes.
Was there emphasis more on that kind of thing than on Jewish defense kind of thing at that point, historically?
I would say that on the whole, I think that was more concern probably about the development of civil rights, at least as I think back over it, although I could be wrong on that, because I didn't sit in on the board meetings, the Jewish Community Relations Committee, but certainly there was very keen interest and considerable effectiveness in the whole field of civil rights, and that had great meaning to the black community. And as you know, Florence Reisenstein today is still seen as a figure of great consequence in the black community. She was the one, by the way, who initiated the need, for instance, the scholarship program of in the black community. However, eventually, I guess we would have to say in the 60s, when the legislation had been passed giving the minorities equal rights and so forth, and it began to become apparent that this was not going to be enough to bring about equality, as they called it, for minorities, the blacks, might as well say, Pittsburgh and Kester, that's really the only minority of concern. The blacks began to push for equal opportunity and for affirmative action programs and so forth. And this meant that legislation was no longer the avenue, but rather different kinds of action. Actual programs sometimes requiring the expenditure of money, sometimes requiring participation in certain kinds of programming and so forth. And the Protestants and the Catholics both began to participate, and no wonder how effectively, in such programming. And they began also to look to the Jewish community to share. And there began to be conversations about three chairs in these undertakings to bring about equality. A Catholic chair, a Protestant chair, and a Jewish chair. But the Jews, these people like Lillian Friedberg and so forth, began to say that the Jewish chair was empty, because if a program, and I'll be specific in a second, if a program was put together calling for money and so forth, or for even other kinds of action, the Jewish Community Relations Council had no resources. All its resources would included the subsidy it got from Federation. That all went for office expenses and personnel expenses and so forth. For example, when it was agreed that there ought to be an attempt to put together some sort of housing for minorities, and a housing committee was put together, the Jews were asked to participate. But the Jewish Community Relations Council was not in any position to make any commitment, although I remember very well that on some meeting of the three faiths, and I think it had to do with housing, although I'm not sure, Victor Cavalier, without the authority, I think at that time was head of the Jewish Community Relations Committee Council, without any prior understanding with Federation, Big Cavalier agreed that the Jewish community would participate.
Financially.
Financially.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of feeling that this was inappropriate. Anyway, eventually, just around this time, Lillian Friedberg finally retired. And his successor, Al Mehlman, came to Pittsburgh. It was agreed that there should be an evaluation of the program of the Jewish Community Relations Council,